Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind, listener mail. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I am Joe McCormick, and it is Monday, the day of each week that we read back messages from the Stuff to Blow Your Mind mailbox. If you have never gotten in touch before, why not give it a shot? You can email us at contact@stufftoblowyourmind.com. Whatever you want to send is fine. Of course, we always appreciate feedback to recent episodes. If you have something interesting to add to a topic we've talked about or a correction you need to make, whatever, just send it on our way. That is contact@stufftoblowyourmind.com. Let's see, Rob, I think I'm going to kick things off today with this message from Adam, which was a response to our Vault episodes on throwing.
Yeah, let's have it.
Adam says, hello, my favorite podcasters and producer. Longtime listener, first time, quote, caller. On your Humans and Animals Throwing series, you discussed humans in their throws using a slingshot structure in the shoulder. I am a disc golf player and longtime martial arts practitioner and have found a different mechanism for the transfer of force. Momentum. When I go to throw a disc during a game, the motion I use is more analogous to a whip motion, starting at my step, moving through my hips, and being released by my arm. During this action, I notice when I've thrown properly that the tips of my fingers feel the most force and can even bruise. I believe that this whip-like motion is also present in the animal kingdom many places, and your discussion, which I listened to during a game, made me think of my anatomical structure in a way I hadn't before. Please keep doing what you're doing. You've gotten me through many day-long trips and have kept my mind active. With respect, Adam. Well, thank you, Adam. I'm a little perplexed, though, about the idea that you're listening during a game. Like, you can... I guess maybe in disc golf, can that be kind of a solitary game where you don't need to communicate? I don't know.
I'm assuming so, or it's certainly he's not listening to us during competitive play.
Yeah.
Because I would not advise that because, you know, I think we have a pretty chill vibe going on here. And, you know, it tends to be exactly what you expect out of everything. But, you know, I don't want to be held responsible should we throw your game off.
I think I was confusing disc golf with ultimate frisbee, right? Or that's a team sport where you'd need to like hear what's going on and communicate.
Yeah, but I think so. This would be penultimate frisbee that we're talking about here.
I have actually played disc golf before, and in the version I played, one thing I really liked about it was simply the design of the holes. So, like, Rob, have you played this where? There's sort of a pole, like a metal pole, where you're trying to get your disc to land in a cup at the bottom of the pole. And when I played, there was like an arrangement of hanging chains that functioned kind of like the net in a basketball hoop. Except I guess it was different because what the chains would do is if you hit the chains with your disc, the disc would just kind of drop down into the hole. Like it would absorb the energy and it, and the thing would fall down. Hmm. It was an elegant system. I liked that design.
Yeah. I haven't played that. I've thrown a Frisbee around and I've played discs of Tron. Those are my main activities with the disc.
But anyway, thank you, Adam.
All right. This next one is a response to our series on hermit crabs. I believe this was a response to the first episode, kicking off our three-part series. This comes to us from Hannah, but I'm going to take a little creative license in reading this.
Across the barren landscape of January, tattered streamers and cracked champagne flutes rolling in the gutters. In the bleak midwinter, the coldest time for tows, the season when your car is somehow either freezing or way too hot, but never just right. When we return blearily to our occupations, uncertain of our grasp on reality, the universe or anything slightly bloated but already regretting our new workout regime. A hope came to us. Crabs are back on Stuff to Blow Your Mind. Thanks for that.
Thank you, Werner Herzog.
Indeed, crabs are back on Stuff to Blow Your Mind. Came back for a three-part series. And like we said, who knows what the future will bring. There's so much crab content out there. And we've discussed crabs a lot, but there's so much more.
I wonder if Herzog ever has done anything on hermit crabs. That seems like it seems perfect for him, you know, like a documentary on the shell trading and the battle for the shells.
I would not be surprised at all. I mean, the man has a tremendous filmography with a lot of documentaries in there. I haven't seen them all. The main ones I've seen from him are the two that he did with volcanologist Clive Oppenheimer, the one on volcanoes and the other one, Fireball. Those are both tremendous, but there are no crabs in them that I remember. But, you know, occasionally there's just something that else that just wanders through the scene that bears rumination from Herzog, like a stray dog in the street, that sort of thing.
Can you imagine how he would pronounce the phrase merciless eviction when talking about the yeah,
it would be cool. I would attempt it, but my impersonation is just a shallow attempt to grasp the majesty of Werner Herzog's narration.
All right, this next message comes to us from Matt. Matt says, "Hey, Robert and Joe, I was just listening to your episode about hermit crabs, and you kept bringing up the handedness of the shells and crabs several times throughout the episode, and it brought back some information I learned in biology. Though it sounded like the handed direction in crabs might be species-specific, at least in some snails, the direction their shell rotates is the result of a maternal effect. This means that direction isn't decided by the individual, but rather their mother. In the case we studied, the snail shell direction was genetically decided, with right-handed being recessive and left-handed being dominant. But it was the genetics of the mother that started the spiral. This means that you can have a snail that is genetically left-handed have a right-handed shell because their mother had right-handed genes who potentially would have a left-handed shell themselves based on their mother's genetics. I think it's a pretty interesting thing to think about and thought I'd share. Also, I was thinking about possible topics for discussion, and I've got a couple. First, the witching hour, aka the devil's hour. This is something that was brought to my attention recently. The thing is, I distinctly remember that hour starting at midnight, but it seems right now it's more commonly assumed to be 3 a.m. I have clear memories of old cartoons featuring a clock striking 12 when supernatural events begin to happen, as well as poems and the like. I had also always associated this with the general belief that that the veil keeping ghosts, fairies, and the like out of our world is thinnest in the place between, and midnight marking the time version of this being the point between one day and the next. This could be a topic you might look into, or perhaps even the idea of a place between and its association with magical happenings. That being more cultural, I have another, more science. You might look into the circadian rhythm, and in particular in things like plants. It seems everything has something like that rhythm, and there has been some research into plants related to the effectiveness of using herbicides based on the time of day it is applied. Many of these could be a good topic for a future episode, or at least lead you to something to discuss. Anyway, love the podcast. It makes my 40-minute commute to work so much more bearable. Thanks, Matt.
Oh, this is fabulous. Yeah, there's some wonderful suggestions in here. And now the whole mention of, the cutoff points for various things like the witching hour reminds me of something I just learned about that I was not aware of. I'm not a huge April Fool's Day fan. I think it can be clever, but it almost always isn't. And I was watching the first episode of the latest season of the BBC series Ghosts, and which is a fabulous series if anyone out there hasn't seen it. But they have an episode that deals with April Fool's Day, and they mention that you don't want to carry out your April Fool's Day gag after midday. This is apparently the tradition in the UK, that if you carry out an April Fool's Day prank after midday, you are the fool, and you have stepped out of line. And I have to say, I like that. I like the idea of taking a holiday or it's not even a holiday, it's sort of a holiday, taking a April Fool's Day, a day I already don't care for, and let's just go ahead and cut it in half. Let's just go ahead and have 50% less of that. Maybe in time we can work it down to like just 25% of the day can be utilized.
Now, I would have a question about that, which is, okay, let's assume you work all of your April Fools into the witching hour. Like, you're only allowed to do April Fools pranks between 3 and 4 a.m. on the night of April 1st. So part of what I hate about April Fool's Day these days is the asynchronous nature of how pranks are propagated in the age of the internet. Mm. So like you post an article that's an April Fool's joke that a lot of these are not even funny to begin with. But imagine it is funny. And you get to, read it on the morning of April 1st. It's usually still on the internet after that. And so I think most of these pranks, which are largely online in one way or another these days, there would be asynchronous reception of the prank, even if the prank is, sort of, quote, published during the allowed time.
Yeah, it muddies the waters, and the waters remain to some degree muddied until they clear out a bit. But, on top of that, there's so much disinformation and misinformation on the internet. Do we really need one day of the year that's all about doing more of it, even if it's supposedly just for laughs? And again, a lot of them are not calibrated well enough to really be laugh intensive. There's some establishments do it well. I always like the NPR April Fool's Day gags, but it's a rare occurrence that I actually enjoy one of these things. But to your point, if you cut it down to between 3 and 4 a.m., on one hand, great, limiting it to just like that 1 hour or so. But then you're pushing it all into like the wee morning hours. Maybe that's going to inspire like even worse practical jokes. It's going to be, trying to wake people up and so forth. I don't know. They just need to get rid of it. Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
Rob, as the local host with allergies here, they sent you some of their nasal spray to treat your allergies. What was your experience like?
Yeah, that's right. I always wrestle with the pollen a bit when it rolls in during the spring. So they sent me the little nasal spray. I tried out the product and yeah, it sure did help me get on top of my symptoms for the day. And it's so fast acting, it was already kicking in before I left the house.
Astapro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astapro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can get Astapro and go today. Astaproallergy.com. Astapro and go. Use this directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. If you haven't heard of Visible, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Having a one-line plan means you only need you to save. No estranged roommates, exes, cousins twice removed, or AI-powered humanoid robots needed. And because $25 a month really means $25 a month, you can call, text, stream, whatever, as much as you want without worrying about getting dinged at the end of the month.
No hidden fees, no surprises. No, really. It's like the old saying goes, you can't judge a book by its cover, but you can judge a company by its name. So spread the word. Tell all your friends there's a wireless company out there with transparency in their name, and they're called Visible. Start saving on wireless today at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
All right. Now, one message we got this week was a follow-up to an email we talked about last week. Last week, we got an email from Jim, a listener who works as an environmental and domestic pest controller in Australia, who expressed some skepticism about the subject of rat kings. Now, we did an episode on rat kings back in December, and one of the big questions about rat kings is, do they occur naturally, or are they all hoaxes perpetrated by humans? We looked at some scientific sources that investigated the issue and concluded that more likely than not, they probably do occur naturally, and at least I was somewhat persuaded by that. But Jim expressed a few reasons for skepticism about whether rat kings do occur in nature. First of all, he just mentioned that in his many years of work, he has found lots and lots of rat nests, but has never come across anything like a rat king. But he also mentioned that, and here's a slightly grisly detail coming, here's a warning, that when a rat is caught by the tail in a trap, it will often sever its own tail to escape, in Jim's experience, presumably gnawing the tail off. You could extrapolate from that if rat kings were to occur in nature with live rats, you would wonder why they don't gnaw their tails off and escape. Now, I thought that was interesting information. I don't know if that's decisive one way or another, especially about the rat biting its own tail off. But I asked in the episode whether Jim was talking about the same species that has been observed in alleged natural rat kings, because if you recall from that episode, basically, the supposedly natural rat kings all feature Rattus rattus, commonly known as the black rat, rather than any other species like Rattus norvegicus. So, Jim writes, I wrote to you about rat kings and forgot to mention the species we were controlling. My apologies, and yes, it is Rattus rattus. And he goes on to say that Rattus rattus is a serious pest in Australia, that Rattus norvegicus is also in Australia, but is mainly found in coastal areas, and that Australia also has several native species of rats, but those are threatened due to introduced species, such as foxes and cats and the introduced rats. So thank you for the update, Jim. And yeah, I would still say that the severing of the tail when trapped does seem to be relevant information to plug into the likelihood calculation there. Though another thing I would comment on is, Jim, you were saying that you've never come across a rat king, and it may just be that even if they do occur in nature, maybe they're just very rare. So you can see lots of rat's nests and never see one. But another thing I would comment on is that almost all alleged rat kings come from places with very cold winter weather. The sources we were reading about them in mention this. So usually they're places on the north end of continental Europe, like Germany, Poland, Estonia, and places like that. And Jim, I wonder if where you are in Australia, I think you said you were in the area of Canberra. I wonder whether that would have cold enough winters to create rat kings, if rat kings are indeed created in nature. So I don't know. Interesting question. Still open in my mind.
All right. This one comes to us from Jesper. Jesper writes in and says, hey, Joe and Rob, thanks for another great episode. This is responding to the Rat King episode from last month. There is indeed at least one metal band that uses Rat King iconography, the doom metal outfit Throneless from my hometown, Malmo, Sweden. You can listen to them here, and they include a link for us to follow, and check out some artwork below. And into the email, Jesper has pasted the logo here for this band that does indeed contain a grotesque Rat King.
Right, and it does seem like perfect metal band iconography. An interesting connection. So the band is called Throneless, and they use a Rat King on at least one of their album covers or something, so some imagery associated with the band. I thought that was interesting. This is probably just a coincidence, but remember in the episode we talked about the history of the term Rat King and how the book chapter that we talked about documented that the earliest uses of Rat King all apparently referred to this old and venerable rat who was like loyally served by the other rats in his nest, or, you know, perhaps even sometimes perching on a throne made of twisted tails. But then somehow over time, the concept of a Rat King became kingless and became throneless. There was no longer a king being served by the other rats. It was just the rats with the twisted tails.
Hmm.
Though, again, I would be surprised if that connection is what the band had in mind. It seems more likely. I don't know. It's metal. It's probably just more like, whoa, that's a gruesome image.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's most likely here.
And by the way, Jesper, I will say I didn't know this band beforehand, but I checked out the Bandcamp page you linked and listened to a couple of tracks. And yeah, I kind of liked it. It was my sort of thing. I'm less into like the death metal and metalcore type stuff and more into the stoner doom kind of metal. And this was in that genre. And it was a pretty heavy example of it.
Yeah. Yeah. I listened to just part of one of the tracks and it did seem like it was hitting on that that doom metal, stoner metal kind of vibe. I have another musical response here. This one comes to us via Discord. And if you're like, whoa, you have a Discord? Well, yeah, there is a Stuff to Blow Your Mind Discord. And if you would like to join it, you just need to email us and we'll send you the link. Anyway, Taylor says, there's a quick comment here. Per the synthwave conversation on the recent listener mail episode, I'm not old enough to have particular nostalgic ties to this kind of music, but I really dig it nonetheless. That said, I am old enough to have grown up with a lot of 8 to 16-bit video game tracks that gave me an early appreciation for synth music in general. And that's a great point. I mean, yeah, the video game music has also influenced and created whole genres of electronic music.
Yeah. I don't know what the name for this genre is, but there is a thing I've heard where people will go through and like painstakingly recreate a piece of original popular music fully in the like sound textures of one of these video game consoles. So it's like the song is made all out of the sounds that you had available as a music programmer of like a Game Boy game or an NES game.
Yeah, yeah. This is considered chiptune.
That sounds familiar.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know that I've listened to any like dedicated chiptune artists recently, it seems like there have been a number of bands that have at least been inspired by it to some degree, you know, so you'll hear a little bit of it sprinkled in here and there.
Man, those NES game soundtracks were really good at pumping you up. There are some that I know I'll never forget. You remember the original NES Batman side-scroller game and the music in that?
But I think I remember the game, yeah.
Yeah, where you could, like, cling to the walls, and it was cool.
All right, Joe, I think we have time for one Weird House Cinema listener mail. What do you have for us?
Oh, we got this one from Fernando. This is in response to I Come in Peace, starring Dolph Lundgren. Fernando says, hello, Robert and Joe, longtime listener, and I might have written to you before. I just finished listening to your episode on I Come in Peace. I am old enough that I actually saw that movie in theaters with my buddies. Congratulations, Fernando. Fernando says, anyway, since at the end of the episode you were talking about notable alien buddy cops, I thought I would bring to your attention one of my favorite movies of the genre, The Hidden. It is gory, suspenseful, and I believe would fit right in Weird House Cinema. Also, I wanted to say hello. See you later. Keep up the good work. Cheers, Fernando. Well, Fernando, thank you. Hello back, and thank you for getting in touch. I looked up the trailer to this, and this does look quite amusing. It looks like a cop movie, sort of a cop movie variation on Invasion of the Body Snatchers. So an Earthling gets possessed. Everybody's like, I've known him for years. You know, he's my neighbor. He's a nice guy. So why is it that he is now robbing banks and looting pawn shops? The alien replicants are just doing crimes. And it seems that only an odd couple of mismatched cops can stop them. And one of those cops is Kyle MacLachlan. The other weird thing is that it appears to have at least two, maybe more, cast members from Twin Peaks. So, of course, there's Kyle MacLachlan, Agent Cooper. He plays one of the cops here, but one of the bad guys from Twin Peaks seems to be one of the alien crime doers.
And then you also got Clue Gulliger in there. So it's a great cast.
Have you seen this one, Rob?
I haven't seen this one. This is not one I'm really familiar with. I don't even recognize the poster art and the VHS art that's popping up here. So I don't know. This one was off my radar.
We'll give it a look. We'll see. We'll see if it is right.
All right. Well, we're going to go ahead and close out this episode of Listener Mail. But hey, keep them coming. Keep writing in about past, current, and future possible episodes of Stuff to Blow Your Mind, Weird House Cinema, anything else we're doing in the Stuff to Blow Your Mind podcast feed. And hey, speaking of that feed, if you haven't reviewed it, rated it, given it a bunch of nice stars, that's something you can do that helps out the show. Go where they allow you to do that and do that for us. We would greatly appreciate it. And if you have critiques of the show, you know, hey, write in about it. That's the best way to get in touch with us, to air your grievances or whatnot. And finally, if you listen to the show on an Apple device, if you use Apple Podcasts and so forth, why don't you go on in there and check and make sure you're still subscribed and that you are receiving downloads.
Huge thanks, as always, to our excellent audio producer, JJ Posway. If you would like to get in touch with us with feedback on this episode or any other, to suggest a topic for the future, or just to say hello, you can email us at contact@stufftoblowyourmind.com.
Stuff to Blow Your Mind is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Season 9 of Next Question with me, Katie Couric. I've got some big news to share with you in our season premiere featuring the one and only Kris Jenner.
Oh my gosh, congratulations. That is very, very exciting.
And that's just the beginning. We'll also be joined by podcast host Jay Shetty, Hillary Clinton, Renee Fleming, Liz Cheney, and many more. So come on in, take a break from the incessant negativity for a weekly dose of fascinating conversations. Some of them, I promise, will actually put you in a good mood. Listen to Next Question with me, Katie Couric, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.